They're checking the prints against the ones on file.
A wasted effort, I'm afraid.
Why? Because in the way I see it, the killer could only be one of two types. Either a person who was seized by a sudden impulse, and in all probability has no police record, or else a sex maniac. And in that case?
In that case, he would have worn a pair of gloves, or have made an effort to erase his prints from the handle.
Right.
We found these tickets in the girl's pockets and in the book she was carrying. Every subway and bus ride she took in the last week. Looks like she saved them all, but none of them carries the date of that fatal Friday afternoon.
She must have cut a vein.
Oh, so that's how your shirt got blood on it.
Who possessed that bloody shirt the police found in your home?
I don't know. I mean...
Wasn't it you who carefully hid that shirt so the police wouldn't find it when they made their first search? Or do you want us to believe the shirt doesn't belong to anyone in your family? Mrs. Marchi.
On that shirt, there are the initials A.M. Alessandro Marchi. And that blood belongs to the same group as Francoise Bigot.
Will you tell us what you know or not?
Look, I...
Say I was the killer.
I was the killer!
Why did you do it?
Let me go and tell everyone!
How could you?
How?
I had to make a stop. I couldn't stand her screaming that way.
Hi, this is Adrienne King, Alice from Friday the 13th, and the hysteria continues.
And indeed it does. Welcome back to The Hysteria Continues. I think this is episode 164, but I could be corrected. And just as we're about to start, Martino the kitten, who you were introduced at last episode, is in the dirt tray, which foolishly I've got right by me, so you may get 3D pooping sounds coming any moment, which so something to look forward to. So
This would technically be episode 166 because we're recording out of order.
Oh, okay. Hmm. Yeah. I thought we weren't doing that.
It's all very
well, it was very confusing.
Yeah, well, let's see. Our next recording session is going to be released before this episode, and it'll be 165. So this will be 166.
Okay, well, whatever it is, we are back to Italy for another giallo, hot on the heels of our torso episode. We are covering another listener pick, and I believe this is a Michael Alashan pick, 1971's giallo, The Bloodstained Butterfly. So it's going to be an interesting one to talk about, because I know this seems to have wildly differing opinions from people. Yeah, it'll be interesting to get into that a little bit later. But before we do, let's have a little chat about what we've been watching recently. So starting with you, Joseph.
Well, I've seen a few things. I thought about saving it since this episode is going to go out after, but I guess I'll just talk about some of the things I saw. Actually, I only saw one thing. It was The Strangers Pray at Night. Maybe the hype got a little too high for this one. I really liked it, but I liked the second half more than I did the first half. I thought the first half was kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just kind of, languid maybe. I sat there and thinking, okay, when is this going to kind of, you know, ramp up a little bit? And when it does ramp up, it's really, really well done. It's definitely more of a slasher film than the first, Strangers film, but I don't know. I wasn't crazy about it like I wanted it to be, but I still liked it. So it's kind of a marginal thumbs up for me.
Okay. Well, I know. I think we've all seen that now, haven't we, Eric? You seen it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think?
Yeah, I would kind of agree with Joseph. I can appreciate that it's really well made, but for me, it still has that home invasion movie feel to it, and it has all the problems that home invasion movies have for me, which is that the killers, because you know they're sort of teenagers hiding behind masks, they're quite annoying rather than frightening, and that sort of it has that Eden Lake effect, I think, and. I don't know if we're going to discuss plot points in the movie, but I should technically have felt a sense of satisfaction, if that doesn't sound too rude, but I didn't. I found the film kind of underwhelming, and I was surprised that there wasn't some kind of dramatic twist in the end. It was quite a linear film. I thought it was building towards something far more dramatic than it did. I won't explain why, but... yeah, I thought there was going to be, because as a sequel as well, I thought, okay, they're going to have to do something slightly different, and but no big plot twists emerged. But I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it. And it's incredibly short. It's 80 minutes, which is the perfect length for a movie, I think.
Okay. Well, interesting. What about you, Nathan? I think you liked it a little bit more, didn't you?
I would easily give it a 9 out of 10. Like, I thought it was fantastic from beginning to end. I loved every bit of it. And I especially loved, like, the pool sequence. I thought that was probably my favorite scene in the movie. I thought it was very well shot. Great soundtrack. I love 80s music, so the soundtrack was awesome.
Two Kim Wilde songs.
Yeah.
You probably love that bit, Justin, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind Kim Wilde. But,
and Bonnie Tyler.
Well, yeah, they're all in it.
But no, great movie. Absolutely thought it was very entertaining. The cast did a good job. The characters make some questionable decisions, but hey, it's a slasher movie. I expect that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm probably more on your side, Nathan. I don't think it's for me, it's not a 9 out of 10, but it's like a solid 7, maybe. I thought the first half was a bit ho-hum. There wasn't really enough to support what was pretty flimsy. But I thought the second half was good, sort of solid, kind of slasher movie fun. I agree with you, Eric, in so much. I like the fact sometimes films don't explain why the killer, you know, like the original Halloween, you don't know why Michael Myers is doing what he's doing. And in this, but it just seems to be, I don't know if they're meant to be the same characters in the first, you know, the same actual people in the first film, or it's some kind of cult or people who just go out. But it's like kind of random. I think there's a line in it where one of the people asks one of the killers why they're doing what they are, and she just says, because we can, or something like that, or why not. I thought it was solid slasher fun for the last half of the movie. The first half, you know, it's kind of interesting. It kind of gets rid of the spoiler alert, but you know, the more recognizable characters don't last as long in the movie, which is kind of an interesting approach. But I wonder, will we get a Strangers 3? I imagine we probably will, at least a sort of direct-to-video or DVD or Blu-ray.
I'm not sure how, though, because I think those are supposed to be the same people, because I'm pretty sure the filmmakers said that it's basically supposed to be the same people, but since this movie came so much later, that they didn't get the same actors that played the Strangers in the original. Right. But the characters are meant to be the same.
What I liked about it was that it's set predominantly in a trailer park, but it's more sort of cabins or static caravans than actual trailers. So it gave it a feel of a Friday the 13th movie, because it felt kind of like a campground.
I kind of wish that the family would have been larger and we would have gotten like a really good like body count movie. That would have been fun. Why it didn't get a 10 from me. Why it got a 9.
It's just four people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and two others in a prologue. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Joseph. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think that's about it. I was rewatching, it's not horror related, but I was rewatching Prison Break, and there's a line where he says, "That's the son of a bitch
you might want to re-say that, because all I got was Skype skips.
Oh, I'll just pick it back up. Okay, here we go. No, the only other thing I've been watching, I was rewatching Prison Break, and there's a funny line in it where someone says, "That's the son of a bitch who fingered John Abruzzi," and I giggled. I giggled at it. So,
oh, it's very immature. So, yeah, apologies if we have a few Skype issues this time. As you know, with Skype, it's completely unpredictable, but hopefully it will rectify itself shortly. But, well, thank you, Joseph. Nathan, how about you?
Well, it's not horror, but I wanted to talk about it anyway because it was a really good movie. It's on Netflix. It's called I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore. And it's basically about a woman who's fed up with people in general just being jerks, because society in general can be selfish jerks. I've seen this many, many times. I was actually at the grocery store recently, and someone had picked up obviously a container of ice cream and then walked on down other aisles and I guess decided they didn't want it and just let it sitting on a shelf, and it was melted. So, I mean, people are just, I mean, can be so annoying. So anyway, this movie's kind of about her getting fed up with that. And then on a particularly bad day, somebody robs her house. So she and this very strange kind of psychotic neighbor, played by Elijah Wood, decide to go hunting down the person that robbed her, and they end up getting in over their heads. It's a really good, like, dark comedy crime film.
I can see, I was going to say, I could tell what attracted you to that film, Nathan.
Yeah, Elijah Wood. Although he's got this rat tail in the movie, that's got to go.
Something for you to hang on to. I've seen that a while back, actually, but I remember it being quite good.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of fun. What about you, Eric, Joseph? Y'all seen it?
No.
Nope, haven't seen it yet.
Nah. The only other thing I've been watching is I'm watching the second season of Riverdale, Justin, and it's going with the serial killer storyline of the Black Hood. Mm. I'm about halfway through it, and, you know, he's been terrorizing the town and sending crazy serial killer notes to reporters and that kind of thing. But you were right as far as I would enjoy it. I'm having a lot of fun with it. It's just high school drama meets, you know, kind of a serial killer in the town. So thumbs up.
Cool. I've kind of, to be honest, I've kind of given up on Riverdale now. So I got
back. Really? I guess it gets bad by the end.
Well, to be honest, I only got up to the halfway point of the second season, and I kind of gave up.
Oh, why?
I don't know. It kind of ran out of steam for me.
Oh, okay.
There's only so many times you can see like teenagers looking moody, and then they kind of save the town, and then, you know, all in one episode, and then it's back, you know, reset. It's just a bit, yeah. But, you know.
Oh, I have a high tolerance for that.
Well, we know you have a high tolerance.
It's so unrealistic.
Yeah. So, well, it's the same universe for Sabrina, the Teenage Witch, isn't it, or something? They're doing a spin-off with that, apparently.
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, apparently, anyway. But, thank you, Nathan. Are you finished?
I'm finished.
Okay, good. Eric, how about you?
Well, the only real thing I have to report since the last podcast is I went to a very, very lackluster screening of Friday the 13th Part 3, supposedly in 3D. So I flew to England. It was a mini festival, four films from 1982 they were screening. So I only went to the final one, which is Friday the 13th Part 3. But they also showed Extro, Creepshow, and The Thing, which I'm sure were top-notch in that. But for the presentation of Friday the 13th Part 3, it was the same print that Paramount put out on DVD and Blu-ray about 7 or 8 years ago, which meant it was Anaglyph, which, for those who don't know, is the red and blue glasses version of the film. So I knew the day before, I read on their Facebook page that they were saying, yeah, we're going to give you your free red blue glasses at the door, don't worry. And I was like, red blue glasses, are you serious? So my alarm bells were ringing, so I wasn't expecting much. And yeah, it was really disappointing. The opening credits weren't in 3D, which I interviewed Larry Zerner, who played Shelley in Part 3, way back when we covered the film on the podcast. And he was saying that one of the highlights of the film is the opening credits, because they were pretty spectacular to watch them zoom out over your head. And, you know, on the DVD and Blu-ray, they're not in 3D. And again, this print wasn't either. Then the Anaglyph just doesn't work. The screen was too dark. When you're looking through the glasses, it drains all the color out of it, and the picture looks really dim. And that there was too much ambient light in the cinema as well, which meant that you were just looking at a mush on screen. And like 10 minutes in, I really sort of felt like I wanted to go home, but I'd come all that way. So, you know, I stuck it out, but it was bitterly disappointing. Very disappointing. So I don't know if they projected the Blu-ray or if they had a digital copy of the print that went out on Blu-ray. But whatever it was pants.
It's pretty impressive that you can come all that way, Eric.
I did, yeah. It would be like across the Irish Sea.
Blimey.
Yeah.
Watch out. Yeah. That's what happens when I get excited about something.
Watch out, Toya. It's a real shame, isn't it? Because, you know, I've said this before, where we said it privately and I talked about it before. I saw it projected properly on the silver screen, with the kind of, what do you call them? The not the anaglyph, but
polarized lenses.
Right. Yeah, and it did look really good. So I remember it looking fantastic, and that would have been an original cinema print, presumably, because that was the BFI, the British Film Institute in London, 10 or 15 years ago, I can't remember, but I remember it being very impressive. So
yeah, so when I mentioned that it was going to be on in Manchester, you said to me, you know, maybe check what kind of print they're going to do, because there's dodgy prints floating around. So I emailed them and they said, we're not quite sure yet, but it might be a digital print we're using. Now, I didn't even think that they'd go for an anaglyph version at that stage. So I thought I was like on, you know, I thought it was a dead cert. It was going to be half decent, but it wasn't at all, I'm afraid.
Yeah. I think I might be wrong in this, but I think they needed a certain type of screen to project it onto.
It needed a special kind of reflective material or something for a screen. So I should have twigged really myself. But on the plus side, it was a really, really spectacularly hot weekend in the UK, and I sat in the garden getting sunburnt and drinking lots and lots of cocktails.
Well, that's
so that was good.
That's good.
So it was well worth the trip, in fairness.
So, I'm glad you enjoyed a sip on a stiff cocktail when you were in Manchester, Eric. It wouldn't be the first time. So,
After that rendezvous we had, Justin.
I wouldn't know about that, but I did hear some stories. Yes. So, anything else, Eric?
I don't think so. No, I saw The Strangers Pray at Night, and that was the only thing. And, of course, our Patreon pick, which we're recording shortly as well.
Okay, cool.
Which I don't know if we can announce, or if we can, or if it's going to be old news, this time traveling we're doing.
It's all very confusing, so I've just given up.
Okay, we'll keep an eye out. Yes, okay. Well, thank you, Eric. Just a couple of things I saw. One was a film called Feral, with Scout Taylor Compton, who, if you remember correctly, I haven't seen her in anything else apart from Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween 1 and 2. And it's kind of a standard kids, or in this case, it's medical students in the woods who get attacked by something and it turns them into monsters. She's a lot more... I think I've just got it kind of burnt into my brain of her, you know, being white trash, swearing, sulky teenager. And now, of course, that was 10 years ago, so she's kind of knocking 30 now. She plays what was, you know, I liked about it. She was one half of a lesbian couple who were portrayed very sympathetically and as if it wasn't any big deal and no one made a big deal out of it, which is kind of nice to see. It was a kind of ho-hum in so much it's kind of you've been done a million times before, but it's kind of a pleasant enough kind of time. Well, not pleasant, but you know what I mean? It was a fun enough time waster. And she was quite an engaging presence in that. So it's kind of those films, you watch it and you can barely remember anything about it after it's finished, but it's a fun 90-minute ride while it happens. Anyone seen that? I think it's from 2017, from last year.
No.
Never heard of it.
No.
Okay. Well, fair enough. Well, another classic I watched last night, which was not really a horror movie, but it was kind of in the mold of The Hand That Rocks the Cradle and Single White Female, all of those kind of like 90s thrillers of the cuckoo. What?
Oh, I love those types of movies.
Yeah.
Called again? There's some kind of name for them.
From Hell.
From Hell.
Back Blank From Hell.
Yeah. The From Hell movies, yeah.
Well, this was definitely in that mold, and it was called Inconceivable, and it's basically a psychotic surrogate mother who gets pregnant and has the babies, then kills the parents and keeps the baby, which is quite a neat twist on, or you know, the usual From Hell things. I mean, there's nothing particularly outstanding this movie, apart from the fact it's got Gina Gershon and Nicolas Cage and Faye Dunaway in it. Bizarrely, Nicolas Cage plays a mild-mannered doctor throughout most of it and doesn't really chew scenery until the last kind of 10 minutes or so. But Gina Gershon is kind of great as the mother who starts to suspect her new best friend who then turns out to be a psycho. And there's a great scene where she somebody gets murdered in a lake with a barbell. And, of course, it's got Faye Dunaway, who does absolutely nothing in the film apart from coo at children and smile, which if you ever seen Faye Dunaway at any point in her life, when you see her smile, it's not a, it's more scary than pleasing. So, but, yeah, it's kind of, it's pretty trashy. It could turn up the trash to an 11. It doesn't quite go there. It doesn't quite, you know, take off. And I think if it had Nicolas Cage in full nutsoid, then it could have been that kind of trash score of 11. But it's, again, it's an entertaining, it's got a few laughs in it, and if you're a fan of those From Hell movies, then you probably get a kick out of it. So I think that's kind of all the main things. I've just started watching Ash versus Evil Dead finally, and enjoying that. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's kind of, it's got a higher production values in, so I don't know why, what I was expecting, but it's actually quite high budget sheen, isn't it? And I didn't realize Sam Raimi had directed at least the first episode.
Yeah,
but mm-hmm. yeah, I enjoyed
that's
it.
That's the only one he directed, I think, is it?
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, he was.
But it hasn't, the quality hasn't really dropped off, has it? And it's kind of, yeah, I liked it. Yeah, so it's all good. That, apart from that, I think that's me done. So, without further ado, have you got your espresso at hand, Nathan, for the Bloodstained Butterfly?
I drank a beer.
Was it too cold? Too hot? Not enough sugar?
It was very cold, actually. I know what you're doing there.
Well, who's Joseph? Is it you going to come us? You're going to bring us off or bring us in or whatever?
He's going to take
us.
Okay. Well, he's what gonna?
He's gonna pull us off.
Oh, Eric!
Your attention, please. We are showing you some scenes from the motion picture, The Bloodstained Butterfly.
Oh, there's blood on your shirt.
Group B and Rh negative. As you recall, it's the blood type of Francoise Pigot.
But for an innocent person, there always remains the hope that he won't have to reveal certain facts that will compromise him. And Alessandro Marchi is innocent.
I visited my mistress.
And the evidence, all of which points directly to the accused, to Alessandro Marchi.
Young female student is savagely killed in a park during a thunderstorm. The culprit seems obvious. Her lover, TV sports personality Alessandro Marchi, seen fleeing the scene of the crime by numerous eyewitnesses. The evidence against him is damning, but is it all too convenient? And when the killer strikes again while Marchi is in custody, it quickly becomes apparent that there's more to the case than meets the eye. The Bloodstained Butterfly opens with the discovery of a dead woman in broad daylight during a rainstorm. So, of course, my hopes were up for a pretty rousing giallo. But this is one of those Italian quote-unquote thrillers that spends much more time on the investigation aspect than it does the garish murders. Perhaps twofold, as we not only get to follow the detective angle, but also a half-baked courtroom dramatics. And, you know, while those things can be and have been good in other films and other genres, I think they're kind of the death knell of a good giallo. And I'm afraid the Bloodstained Butterfly never really reaches for heights beyond the sort of stiff, languid scenes of procedural justice that would probably fare better in a 30-minute episode of Perry Mason. I mean, the movie is competently made, and some of its photography is gorgeous to look at, no doubt. But, man, this movie's so dull. And, you know, that is cardinal sin numero uno when it comes to movies, horror, slasher, thriller, or, you know, otherwise. You know, even an incompetent movie can be entertaining. A movie with a flourishing budget and talent behind the camera really has no excuse. And it's the type of movie I've seen twice this week, and yet I still can't remember much of it beyond my paltry notes. So that being said, thumbs down, but I do acknowledge that the film has a few things going for it, sparse as they are. It's just not really my cup of tea as far as giallos go. I think I know someone who may have a differing opinion, and that someone is our resident joke maker, Eric. So take it away, Eric.
Yeah. Well, when I first saw this film, which was when I got the Blu-ray from Arrow maybe a year and a half ago or so, I found it really confusing. You know, as with a lot of giallo, it took a second watch to sort of appreciate it, well, to follow it really a bit more. The thing is, there's lots of characters in giallo, particularly in the early 70s, and they all sort of dress the same and they look quite similar. So unless they're any sort of the big names, so, you know, like Ray Lovelock, George Hilton, Edwidge Fenech, I can often have difficulty telling sort of who's who in a film. So it really benefited from a second viewing, and I liked it a lot more the second time around. Having said that, I do agree that it's painfully slow in places. You know, it does that thing that I don't like in certain giallo, which is, as you said, focus on the police investigation. And it goes even a step further here and has a lot of courtroom scenes as well. So it's very sparse on the sort of the murdery mayhem that we like on The Hysteria Continues. It's certainly a far cry from The New York Ripper, which I think was our last episode, but I don't know, with our time traveling again, I don't know what our last episode was at this stage. You do really need to pay attention, and they even have that bit after the opening credits where it has a little text explanation of who's who and what their relationships are. You know, and it wouldn't have surprised me if this was maybe added to the film after the fact, if the maker sort of realized, okay, it's kind of all over the place. Because if you listen to the audio commentary on the Blu-ray with Kim Newman and Alan Jones, who are two UK genre journalists, Kim Newman makes a very good point in that the plot of the film is actually quite simple, but it's made sort of really convoluted by all the stuff going on in courtrooms and police investigations and stuff. The actual denouement is... you know, very straightforward, although it is a delicious twist. I thought that the final few minutes where it's revealed who the killer is. So it does reach a point where it's constantly tying itself up in knots, and everyone is two-faced and they all have something to hide. There's people having affairs, there's people who you know, are hiding evidence, all that type of stuff. Whilst I do agree it's not terribly exciting, I do get the impression that I'm probably the only one in here that of the four of us that liked it to a degree. For a film like this, I really have to be in the right mood to watch it, like the stars have to align. And I think they did to a degree when I sat down to watch it early in the week, because I didn't find it as dull as you guys seem to have. But I still agree that it's sluggish. It's 99 minutes or so. And, you know, there's three murders in the entire film, and they're all kind of, and not quite off screen, but they might as well be, you know, they take up maybe 30 seconds of that 99 minutes. So you're not going to get, you know, a thrill a minute slasher movie with this one. But possibly a 6 out of 10 movie for me. As just from saying, there's lots of people who like the film. I'm somewhere in between, I think. Okay. Better than Fella Day.
No, I disagree. Justin, what do you think of the Bloodstained Butterfly?
I'm a big fan of the giallo, and I appreciate sometimes when they do something different. I don't know. It's a curious beast, really, because it was made in 1971. So pretty much hot on the heels of Bird with Crystal Plumage and they kind of burgeoning giallo boom. So it seems I think the film could be improved, would have been improved a lot if it had been slightly more sensationalized. I mean, it kind of flirts with all sorts of salacious kind of tidbits, but it doesn't really get going with any of them. But I think this biggest sin, as you said, Joseph, is that it's a trifle dull and meandering. And I think the director, apparently his previous giallo, Death Occurred Last Night, it again was quite morose, and he seems to have a kind of, I don't know, there seems to be his style was to make the characters quite morose. And not that, you know, tales of murder should always be, you know, cartoonish, but it just everything, you know, it just seemed a bit uneven. You had attempts at humour with the inspector, with his always complaining about his coffee, which is a kind of trope in the giallo. You've always got, like, the inspectors always have some kind of quirk to them, whether or not it's kind of like talking about boiled eggs or whatever it is. There's always some kind of quirk. But I think what it could have done with would have been sort of some, like, kind of set pieces, like the Argento-style set pieces, where you actually have, you know, sort of the kills were actually a bit more climactic rather than anticlimactic. Bar the first murder, the other two murders in the film, or the murders of the film hinges on, are kind of over in the blink of an eye. So if you'd cut, so, like, 5 minutes of the kind of the kind of Helmut Berger looking morose and walking down the street staring at his shoes or playing his piano, and had like 5 minutes of stalking and a bit of cat and mouse in there, it would have enlivened it, no end. I mean, there were bits in it I kind of liked. I liked the music. I liked. I thought it's stylishly shot. There's some funny bits in it. I mean, it's very much of its time. You know, you've got like, there's the murder taking place in the park, and in the courtroom they're saying the park is full of homos and perverts. There's the scene where the guy tries to rape the teenage daughter of his lover, and then when he gets caught by his girlfriend, who's the wife of the man who's up for murder, he's tried to say he was trying to teach her judo, and then when she gets understandably a bit pissed off of him, he just says, "Oh, you're very pretty when you're angry." So it's all those kind of they're very off kilter to a modern day audience now. Kind of sexual politics going on. I also really like the twist. I thought the twist was clever, which we can spoil in a little bit after Nathan's given his tuppence on it. I think they kind of wasted Helmut Berger, because I really like him in a lot of films. I think he's fantastic in things like Massimo Dallamano's Dorian Gray. He's kind of completely over the top in films like Street Killers. He was in a lot of he's in Faceless with Jess Franco. And in this, he plays the kind of good guy, or is he the good guy? But he plays quite a bland, tortured hero or anti-hero. And it doesn't really suit him. He's kind of better at those kind of slightly more twisted characters, which he eventually becomes later in the movie. But for much of the movie, there's not much entertainment value watching Helmut Berger just sitting morosely playing a piano for 20 minutes. It kind of, so overall, it's not a giallo that I would return to as often as something much trashier, or any of the Argento or Fulci or the Sergio Martino films. It's a middling giallo for me. I probably like it less than Eric. I do like it to some degree. I can appreciate a lot of its qualities, but it's when I wrote the review on Hysteria Lives, I kind of said, and this was back, I must have watched a very bad bootleg back in 2007, and I do have the Arrow Blu-ray now, which looks fantastic. I remember writing that it's one of those films that you start looking at the crack in the ceiling and wondering if it's got any bigger since you start watching the movie, and that's never a good sign. It's a middling giallo for me, and it's not one that I would return to that often, to be honest.
Okay. And before we recorded, Nathan had sent me a private message saying how much he loved the Bloodstained Butterfly, so let's hear from him.
How long is this movie? An eon? I mean, I swear to God, Eric's saying it's 99 minutes. Are we sure it wasn't 599 minutes? Are we certain of that? Because during watching it, I thought this movie was never going to end, and I kind of thought that maybe I'd somehow died and gone to hell, and I was having to watch this as punishment for my sins, and it almost made me want to convert because it was that dull. Oh my God, this movie's so boring. Like, nothing happens in this movie, absolutely nothing. The most thrilling thing is watching a cup of coffee being made. Yeah, that's thrilling. Oh, I couldn't wait to watch more coffee being talked about in this movie. Oh, God, it was so awful. I'm sorry. Look, here, I'll say some nice things because I don't like to be somebody that can't say anything nice about a movie. I thought the opening was good. Unfortunately, it set me up for disappointment. And I thought the twist was very cheesy. And I thought if this had been a much more trashier giallo, that twist would have fit very well. And it probably would have been extremely entertaining. But how are we going to, like, cover a movie like Torso, a masterpiece, and then follow it up with this, like, awful, I mean, oh, man, watching paint dry movie. I mean, I would rather just watch paint dry. It's just, oh, my gosh. I can't even tell you much about it. I literally had to force myself to finish this. I said to myself, Nathan, don't go get a snack. Don't look at your phone. You know, you have to watch this movie. You have to. So I had to have a lot of self-discipline. I sat in front of that TV, and I spent 99 agonizing minutes watching this film. And I don't remember much except what I've written down, and what I've written down is dull, 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 dull.
Welcome to our world, Nathan.
And I know, and this you're all...
what a Ten Killer was like for us.
I promise you that my next pick, all three of you will pay for this, and you will pay dearly.
We didn't pick this movie.
Yeah, we didn't.
Yeah, but you liked it. You defended it.
Ooh.
So, yeah, you liked it. You must suffer.
Nathan, you're sounding like the plot to one of your movies.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's what Eric likes, so I was trying to give him some more of that.
Selfish Jallo defense.
Y'all's turn! But in all seriousness, I mean, I'm obviously being dramatic here, but I just wasn't a fan. I mean, it really is. It tested my patience a lot. I wasn't that invested with the characters. I mean, I thought Helmut Burger was good in the movie, but I just feel like he wasn't given a whole lot to do. And I don't know. It's just it just doesn't have, to me, it didn't have the style that makes a giallo really good to me. The style wasn't there. It was, I don't know. I didn't feel it was stylish at all. And courtroom dramas and police dramas, if I'm wanting to watch that, then I'll watch that. If I'm wanting to watch a giallo or a horror or slasher movie, that's what I want. And I just don't really feel like I got that with this movie. And it's a shame because, I mean, it is filmed well. And I thought all the actors did a really good job in it, and I love the twist, but those three things to me were just small potatoes compared to having to sit through the film. So I'm very sorry, Michael Alishan. I apologize that I couldn't enjoy it. Just not my cup of tea.
Yeah. And one of the amusing things about this film is the tagline is apparently once the killing had started, it could never stop. I think they should change it to once the running time had started, it could never stop.
Uh-huh. I would absolutely have to agree with that.
Wow.
Yeah. I tend to like a lot of the giallos that are more mid to late 70s than I do the early 70s or like the late 60s. I don't know what it is, but usually around 73 or 74 is when they start getting kind of good. Anything from, like, you know, the late 60s to like 71 or 72, I always find myself like having a hard time, you know, staying focused on the narrative. And this movie was definitely no exception to that rule. I don't know.
Okay.
Maybe it's the changing times. As the times had changed, you know, they were allowed more violence, more kind of, you know, avant-garde ghoulishness in throwing that in there. And I think a lot of these earlier films are probably still skirting a kind of a fine line as far as what you could show in movies and stuff. So maybe that's it. I don't know.
Although the early 70s did give us the case of the bloody iris. I like that one.
That's
pretty
good. That's a good one.
Torso, yeah.
As Nate's saying, the twist at the end is very, very cheesy, and it would have, like, if the rest of the film had been strip nude for your killer, I think we'd all be, our eyeball, I think we'd all be waxing lyrical about it. But the fact that it's just so bogged down in courtroom scenes and police investigations,
I agree, and to me, it's what Joseph said, like, the only thing I ask out of any movie I watch is to just be entertaining. And you guys know I love some really bad movies, but that's because they entertain me. So, the worst thing in the world for me is when a movie's not entertaining me. And and unfortunately, this one did it. I think that if it would have just had courtroom stuff or police stuff, but it just combined both, and I felt like at least an hour of this movie was that alone.
Okay, well, should we move on to some background?
Should we spoil the ending first?
Oh yeah, let's go. Would you want to? Who wants to do that? Eric, why don't you do that for us all?
Okay, I don't know if I can eloquently spoil the ending in any way, but the film hinges around this sports reporter on the television who's accused of murdering this girl at the start of the film, and it turns out he did in fact do it. Although we're meant to think he's innocent, but whilst he's in prison, two more murders happen, so the police release him, thinking he's not the killer. But Helmut Berger commits the two murders whilst he's in prison so that he gets released so that Helmut Berger can kill the sports reporter, because this is all very convoluted. There's probably an easier way to say this, because Helmut Berger's character was the boyfriend of the initial victim. So he wanted.
Doesn't that make Helmut Berger like just as bad as the killer?
Yes, they're insane. Yeah,
because it's a that is so wrong. You murdered innocent people.
I did. I
it's
like
a very effective twist, I think, in an otherwise a different movie deserves that twist.
It's like when you put on a Susie and the Banshees album and you're really, really bored, and then at the end, like, a good song comes on for maybe 30 seconds.
So you admit that there's a good Susie song?
Yeah.
No, it's a hypothetical situation.
Well, it's hypothetical because it would never happen. You'd never be bored by a Susie album, would you, Eric?
I think you would.
Oh, but I don't think you would. But moving on, just one thing I was going to say, which I thought was a bit of a plot hole, was that the Helmut Berger was also sleeping with the daughter of the sports reporter who turned out to be the killer. And he said that, she said that the girl who got murdered had a secret boyfriend, but nobody knew who it was. But all the way, but there's about 10-minute flashback of Helmut Berger and the girl who gets murdered swinging arms and skipping through the streets of whatever Italian city they're in. And
the holidays in a faraway city.
Well, maybe it was. Maybe it was. But yes. But anyway, that was that was a bloodstained butterfly. But let's
fly off to Colorado. And they go swinging hand in hand down the streets. And nobody back home knows of their secret liaisons.
It could be. Could be.
I see neither of them are denying it.
Well, I can't. Sorry.
Well, Scott broke up, so I only heard something about skipping in the streets.
Yeah, you and Joseph skipping down the streets of Colorado hand in hand. And then
Colorado?
I don't know, because it's not Tennessee.
It's too cold in Colorado.
Yeah, that's why you're holding hands to keep each other warm. And then you, like, snuggle up and go,
I think you and Justin were the ones that had the little liaison.
How
in
dare.
A public bar, no less.
Eric, thou doth protestimum.
Whatevs.
Yeah.
That's ignorant.
Yeah, come on. I think we need to put these rumors to rest, Eric, don't we? Because hands on heart, it didn't go beyond a light fisting, did it, Eric?
Yeah. I still can't
who was the light. Top and who was the top and who was the bottom?
I'll have a guess.
I think Eric was the top.
Well, obviously. I'm the butch one.
What? What? I don't, you know. Spinning top, maybe, but...
Try laughing while you can, because you'll see.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on to some background. So, who would like to go first? How about you, Nathan? Nathan, you had plenty of time.
Nathan, yeah. Okay, Nathan should have lots of background.
Yeah, the Italian title for this is Una Farfalla Conley Alley in San Guinetti.
Wow.
It's like you're invoking the Necronomicon in The Evil Dead.
Oh, God. I hope that the bloodstained butterflies doesn't, like, flood my house now and try to turn me into one of their own.
You'll be cursed to watch this movie now for all eternity.
Let's see. Unfortunately, I don't have a whole lot. I know that it was released in Italy. The language was Italian. It was released August 31st, 1972 in West Germany. It's also known as Blutspur Ein Park. And the filming locations were Bergamo, Lombardia, Italy. And it was featured in a movie called Mad Dog Helmet. I bet that's about Helmet Burger.
It is.
Yes.
He wears hamburgers for hats.
Has anyone seen that documentary about Helmut Berger? Because it's in the audio commentary, Alan Jones makes reference to it, and it sounds quite peculiar.
I would, well, talking of Helmut Berger, have you seen, did you see the introduction to the Bloodstained Butterfly on the Arrow Blu-ray?
Not the introduction, no, I must.
Because you can play.
Maybe you dozed off.
Already? Introduction? Wow.
Well, no, you can play the Arrow Blu-ray with the introduction from Helmut Berger, and he went from, he was very beautiful sort of in the 70s, and now obviously he's a lot older. He must be in his late 60s, early 70s, but there's some photos. If you search Helmut Berger today, go on, have a look. And there's photos of him out covered in lipstick, drunk, with cigarettes, with like a scarf wrapped around his head and all sorts of things. He's quite notorious. I was just going to say, in the intro, he kind of basically, he just sort of says, oh, I made all these films with fantastic directors. Oh, and I made this movie. And the director, his head was somewhere else when, you know, this funny little B movie I made, which is kind of so bizarre kind of intro to the film, but it's kind of fitting, I kind of guess.
I was just going to say that Alan Jones says about the documentary, is it Mad Dog Helmet it's called? Hmm. Apparently he has a wank on camera.
What, in the documentary?
Yeah. Sounds bizarre. Yeah. Now I'm probably going to go to prison for slander now, but Alan Jones says it on the commentary.
Okay, right. Well, there you go. Well, that's a showstopper and a half, isn't it? Yeah. So, Nathan, did you have anything else?
Yeah, I bet you guys didn't know that there's a connection between the Bloodstained Butterfly and one Jamie Lee Curtis.
No. What is the connection?
All right. Well, the Bloodstained Butterfly features an actress named Wendy DeOlive, and she was in a miniseries called David Copperfield, and there's a magician named David Copperfield that was in Terror Train with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Wow.
I know. Can you guys believe I put that together?
Is that really a connection, or is that not really a connection, is it?
Oh, come on. How many David Copperfields do you know?
Well, there's the Dickens novel and there's the magician.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Dickens novel is named after the magician.
It is, yeah, in fairness.
Yeah.
So there we have it.
Well, follow-up novel, Paul Daniels, was really good as well.
So I think you can now see why we get offered so many commentaries for our insightful thoughts.
Research.
I've looked up a lot of stuff about this movie. I should be surprised.
Okay, right. Well, thank you. Well, who would like to go next? Unless you've got another kind of connection you want to share with us, Nathan.
No, I think that one was superb. I can't top that.
Okay, you probably can't. No. So
top lot of things, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what about you, Joseph? What kind of background have you got?
Not a whole lot, but it was released in West Germany as Secret of the Black Rose, which was the name of an Edgar Wallace story on which this film was based. AllMovie gave the film a very positive review, saying this beautifully assembled giallo is among the best of its time, and that it features a genuinely intelligent script, a rarity in a subgenre generally known for flamboyant visuals at the expense of narrative cohesion. That's pretty much all the background I could muster up. So,
okay, well, thank you.
There you go.
Eric.
Yes, this film has an Amy Steele connection as well, because she likes to eat butter when she flies in an airplane. So I hear, anyway. So
I was about to say, can you confirm that? Can you confirm it?
I can confirm it, yes.
That's your joke of the week.
Oh, Perry Seltzman joke of the week, it's a humdinger. Oh. Okay, well, the film premiered in Rome in September 1971. It did quite well in the box office. A lot of the prints omit the opening scene where all the characters are introduced with title cards, and a lot of prints commence with the girl in the yellow coat spotting the murdered girl rolling down the hill. Director Duccio Tirari, I think is how you pronounce it. I think we may have mentioned this. He also made Puzzle in 1974, which starred Luke Marinda and Anita Strindberg. He also directed a film called The Bastard! It's a 1968 crime drama film starring Rita Hayworth and Klaus Kinski. He worked on the script for Hercules and the Haunted World, which was directed by Mario Bava, and he was an uncredited writer on A Fistful of Dollars. He's apparently best known for two westerns he made in 1966, A Pistol for Ringo and its sequel, The Return of Ringo. And he actually has a cameo in Bloodstained Butterfly as one of the eyewitnesses to the murder. He's seen being interviewed by the police, and he's wearing a large red carnation. His wife is in the film as well. Her name is Lorella De Luca, and she plays the role of Marta, who is... I think she's the character who's having the affair with the sports reporter, if I'm not mistaken. What else do I have here? It was co-financed with a West German film company, which is why there's a few German actors in the cast, like Helmut Berger, Gunther Stahl, and Wolfgang Priess. Helmut Berger went on to be in Dynasty, which I didn't realize. Do you remember him from that, Nathan?
No, who did he play?
I don't have the character name here, I'm afraid, but I think he was only in one series, but yeah.
I think it was Crystal Carrington.
Did he play Crystal Carrington?
He did, yeah.
Wow.
No, I don't make that up.
Nathan. What else? Oh, yeah, Ida Galli, under her pseudonym, Evelyn Stewart plays Maria, the wife, and she's probably most recognizable for her roles in other giallo, like The Weekend Murders, Case of the Scorpion's Tail, Knife of Ice, Footprints in the Moon, The Psychic, and The Night Child. And that's all I have.
Is it Ida or Ida?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I didn't even intend that to be. Okay, so now, Justin, it's...
Yow's turn!
Well, thank you very much. You've covered a lot of what I was going to talk about, which is fine. But let's have a look. Gianfranco Clarici was the co-writer with the director of this, and also I think Edgar Wallace has a credit as well. Obviously, I don't think he wrote it, but again, it was probably shoehorned into the crimi cycle in Germany, which is why there was a bit of a crossover at the time, and we all know how much you love those crimis, Nathan. So, but he was...
They were better than this.
Was Phantom Soho better than this, do you think?
I liked it better.
I enjoyed The Phantom of Soho more than this film.
Really?
If I'm honest.
Okay, no.
Yes.
Okay. Well
myself did come to the conclusion we preferred Axum to Fela Day.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Speak for yourself there.
Yeah, speak
Eric.
For yourself there. Okay.
He can speak for me.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say.
Stop yourself!
And take a deep breath, everyone. Let's move on. So Gianfranco Clarici was a co-writer of this, along with the director and, as I said, Edgar Wallace. But he was involved, and this is where we do actually have a proper link, but he was the writer for New York Ripper. He was also involved with Phantom of Death, which is a great late 80s giallo with Michael York and Edwige Fenech. So he worked with Ruggero Deodato on a number of things, including The House on the Edge of the Park and Cannibal Holocaust. He also was involved with Delirium, Murder Rock, The Antichrist, one of Eric's favourites, I'm sure, Five Women for the Killer, High Crime, which was one of the most popular Politeschi movies with Franco Nero. It's one of the big sort of, which were the kind of, the Politeschis were the crime capers with the police, which kind of took over from the giallo in the kind of mid-70s, and also Don't Torture a Duckling. The inspector was played by Silvano Tranquilli, and he was also a bit of a giallo regular in quite obscure films. There's Cat in Heat, which I've reviewed on History Lives, So Sweet, So Dead, which is, when you look at something ultra trashy, that's about as trashy as you can get, Smile Before Death, which is another very, very trashy giallo, which would be a fun one to cover, and also Black Belly of the Tarantula. I think that's...
So Sweet, So Dead, is that the slasher as a sex maniac?
Yes, I think so. Yeah,
yeah, I like that one a lot.
That's really super trashy. That'd be a fun one to cover.
Yes, very.
But also the Smile Before Death is really, really trashy, and that would be a really fun one to do as well at some point. So, yeah. Okay, right. Well, that's the Bloodstained Butterfly. So do we have a roll call of what people on the forum said about this movie, Joseph?
Just a couple of people on Facebook. Nothing from Twitter this week. Gary Yoon on Facebook says, I did like this, but found the ultimate denouement to be remarkably silly. I was so eager to kill you for killing my loved one that I murdered innocent people to get you released. That's the twist, by the way, we already talked about. The journey to that ending is enjoyable, though, and it has yet another great 70s giallo soundtrack. I would disagree. I think the ending's great, but the journey's not so great. Anyway, David Cook says, a movie that seems to get better with each watch as you keep spotting things you missed. And that's all the feedback we have for the Bloodstained Butterfly.
Okay, right. Well... are we going to bother with an after the credits? Because everyone dies, don't they, really?
Mm.
Spoiler alert. So
I really don't think we have much for after the credits, I'm afraid.
No.
There's really nowhere to go, I would say, after that.
Spirit is crushed.
Yes.
You know, it makes me sad.
So you don't want to...
Well, we'll be happy, though. I know one thing that will make him happy.
And would that be...
That.
It's my joke of the week. It's so bright and fantastic.
So, the other day, I was putting some of my motorcycle headgear between two halves of a brioche bun. It certainly was a nice helmet burger.
It was funnier the first time you told it.
Yeah, it was funny. The joke was actually funny.
Justin, I know you're a vegan. Actually,
yeah.
The joke was actually funny, but Justin was like, you're breaking up.
I had to do a second take and ruined it. Thanks, Justin. No, but Justin, you're a vegan, but I bet you'd like to get your mouth around a helmet burger.
Well, maybe I make an exception. Not now, I think.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't even now. And my standards are low.
Well, we know that. Yes. So, okay, well, this could be the shortest episode on record.
It's not a Deadly Friend episode, but close enough.
Okay.
Well, it was Deadly Friend, pretty short.
Yeah, it's like 47 minutes, I think.
Was it? Blimey. Okay. So, well, have we got anything else that we want to say?
Yeah, I have one thing.
Okay.
That's all.
See, I saw people.
They
actually,
were selfish.
Yeah, I saw people actually saying
if you think
that they
about
were glad.
It, seriously, this is Justin's fault.
My fault? Why is it my fault?
Yeah, because you taught Eric how to get the soundboard working.
Yeah,
I know. Well, we're very lucky actually that we're recording at all today because I had to do a time machine reset on my MacBook. last night. When I came down this morning, it was the wheel of death was spinning, and I thought, oh, so I was going to have to hand it all over to you, Eric, to do.
But, well, I'm recording here in the background, and it's all going swimmingly.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. But yeah, I think it was all, yeah, anyway, but it's all kind of, it's all worked out nicely. So, what are we recording next time? Well, actually, yes. What are we recording
Nathan's
next time?
Nathan's, what we're recording next time is Scream 2. But when you listen to this, it'll be Nathan's pick. So
it's going to all be very confusing. It's like a giallo, isn't it? It's very convoluted. Mm-hmm. The hysteria continues.
Fiction.
Yes. But Nathan, what are you going to treat us to next time?
Well, as long as we can find them so you guys can watch them, then I'm going to treat you all to Nathan's House of Pain Part 2. Oh. We're going to watch a double feature of Death Nurse and Death Nurse 2. Get back in bed, you nosy old bitch. That will make sense, that quote, when you watch the movies.
Okay.
Well, your tagline's a lie. You said Part 2. Wouldn't this be more like Part 50?
Yeah.
No, because there's a lot of unofficial ones, but this is the official House of Pain Part 2. I think my first one was the Terror at Tenkiller double feature.
What was that build with again? It was Blood Lake?
Was it Blood Lake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Then that was an awesome double feature.
So could we...
would be just as good.
So would we be able to pick up the Criterion release of Death Nurse 1 and 2?
Should be on Blu-ray.
They got a phenomenal Blu-ray release.
But if we can't find it, then I've got something else in mind. I'm not going to tell you guys what it is, but I will say this. You probably, Joseph, if you can, you'll want to find these because my backup is something that none of you are going to be happy about. But I'm going to keep that secret. No, I love all y'all. I think y'all are great. But, you know, we have to cover these kind of movies. The fans demand it.
Well, yes. Well, demanding it. Well, tune in next time to see, God knows, just pray that we are watching Death Nurse 1 and 2 because, you know, heaven only knows what else Nathan has up his sleeve.
I think I know what the other
so much fun.
I know what the other movies are that he was going to pick.
No, actually you don't, because this was a spur of the moment thing today. So it's not anything that I've mentioned, unless you've taken a lucky guess.
I was going to say the Rob Zombie Halloween films.
Oh God, I'm not that masochistic.
Yeah. Suddenly Death Nurse seems more appealing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Bring it on. Bring it on. So, okay, well, tune in next time for Nathan's bedside manner, and he'll be taking care of us all permanently with Death Nurse 1 and 2. But what are we playing out with, Joseph?
This is just music from the Bloodstained Butterfly.
Okay.
It's actually good music. Mm. No, I like the music. It's really well done.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for listening to Hysteria Continues. And also, actually, we're going to be forgot to mention, actually, this is how you get in contact with the show. So if you want to tell us your happy memories of when you first saw Death Nurse 1 or Death Nurse 2, or maybe you had a romantic double bill, or, you know, any interesting stories about your time with Fat Nursey, then get in contact with the show, and this is how to do it.
The content of this podcast was provided by Justin, Joseph, Eric, and Nathan. If you enjoy our show and are willing to provide a donation, please consider becoming a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/thehysteriacontinues. Your monetary kindness keeps the show on the air, and in return, you'll have access to exclusive content not released elsewhere. Also, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter to stay up to date on all of our future shows and Blu-ray commentary releases. For general feedback, our email address is thehysteriacontinues@gmail.com.
Yeah, please do get in contact with the show. And also, if you want to support us, please, and thank you to all the people who do, just join up to Patreon, become a Patreon supporter for as little as a dollar or two a month. And we would love you long time. And also, you get exclusive access to exclusive non-slasher but horror-related episodes. Plus, you get to at least a week, usually, sometimes up to 2 weeks, early access to all the main shows as well. So check us out on Patreon. So thank you for listening. So say goodbye to the good people.
Goodbye.
Good fly.
Goodbye.
Everyone. Goodbye. This is me saying goodbye in Italian.
Was that, was good fly, was that like a butterfly joke?
Yes, that was my joke of the week.
Very good. Did you see that massive moth I found? That's funny, actually, thinking about it. That's huge.
Yeah, we have some of those. We have some of those here from time. Every now and then, I'll see one like on a window, like at a grocery store, because they're attracted to like the neon or the fluorescent lights.
Okay, but it was huge. Yeah. It was dead. I'd like to see a live one, but it was size of a baby's fist.
So, really?
Anyway, on
comparison.
Well, I don't know. Let's gloss over that. So, anyway, catch you next time on The Hysteria Continues.
So, the other day, I put some of my motorcycle headgear between two halves.
It was a nice helmet. We're breaking up there. So,
I wasn't breaking up.
You're breaking up on my end. You're breaking up on my end, so...